Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing? I am doing great. And do you know why? If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, then I'm going to tell you why now. I'm doing great because this is episode number 100 of the Labyrinth Library Podcast. Play it up, boys! All right! Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. I would like to thank the Academy and my mother and father and everybody. Let me start reading my name off the list. All right. Now, I do want to thank everybody who has listened, everybody who has emailed, everybody who has commented, everybody who has retweeted and joined the Facebook page and guessed a clue or answered a riddle. All of you who are listening, I do want to thank you because at my heart, I am a selfish person, and I do think that without the feedback, without the constant knowledge that somebody is out there, I might have given up on this a while ago, but I didn't. I didn't. I've gone for 100 episodes on this, and I'm ready to keep going, so I have to thank you. You know, I do enjoy doing this. It's fun setting up all the audio equipment and having something to do on Wednesday nights, but having you guys out there, knowing that you're listening, knowing that you're enjoying it, really makes it all worthwhile, so thank you very, very much. I truly, truly appreciate it. And as sort of a celebration for the 100th episode, I've got two things. The first is I have created a listener survey. It is your basic 10-question survey about what you think, what your ideas are, a little bit of rating, a little bit of, the usual opinion survey. So if you could fill that out, it'll take only moments of your time. I would really appreciate it. It would make me hopefully be able to create a better product for you. And I will put a link to that up on the Facebook, and I'll keep referring to it in Twitter, and of course on the blog, which brings me to my second point, is that I went and bought myself a domain name. Actually, two domain names, because I was getting impatient and confused. So now, if you want to see my brand new blog, which looks much fancier than the Blogger blog, you just have to go to thelablib.org. Isn't that nice? Isn't that great? Nice, short, brief. I love it. It is much nicer looking, of course, than the Blogspot or Blogger blog. And it's WordPress, which is great. You can also go to thelablib.com, which also maps to thelablib.org. Like I said, this is not my area of expertise, setting up websites and such. So I got a little confused and a little impatient. I now own two domain names, but they both point to the same place. So whichever one you want to, you can make it happy. You make yourself happy, I should say, and go there. I will not be switching the feed just yet, so for another few weeks I'll keep updating both blogs just to give everybody time to, if you want, change all of your RSS feeds and change your bookmarks, and I'll give you plenty of warning before I stop updating the Blogspot blog. So don't worry about that. I mean, I'm in no rush, really. Pretty much because I'm also convinced that anytime I make a large change, something horrible will happen. You know, last night I was trying to set up this whole WordPress thing, and I was convinced that I was going to start launching nuclear missiles somewhere. So anyway, this is great. That's my little present to myself, and my present to you is a new blog and a listener survey. So isn't that great? Anyway. Like I said, it's 100th episode, and so for the 100th episode, we're going to talk about what else would you talk about for the 100th episode of anything? Death. Yes, indeed. I gave you a clue last week. It was just a series of words: cancer, car crash, flaming marshmallow. Unfortunately, I got no correct guesses this week, but that's okay. I can live with that. I was keeping myself busy. I wasn't getting upset or paranoid or angry. The book this week is a fairly new book, just came out in late October. It is Machine of Death, a series of short stories edited by Ryan North, Matthew Bernardo, and David Mulkey. So, here's a question for you. How would you live if you knew how you would die? Think about that for just a moment. The premise for this collection of short stories was introduced back in 2005, in an installment of Ryan North's very popular Dinosaur Comics. In it, he presents the following premise. There is a machine which, with only a small sample of your blood, can tell you how you will die. But there are no dates, there's no details, there's no explanations, just a few words, and that's it. The machine is never wrong, But it is annoyingly vague and has a decidedly unmachine-like love of irony. So you might get old age and think you're set, right? Well, not necessarily. You could be murdered by an octogenarian while trying to steal their TV. Or you might get plane crash and decide never to fly again. All right, fine, but that won't stop the single-engine Cessna from plowing into your house one fine spring afternoon. Or pulled guillotine, did you? Well, I hope you know to stay away from heavy metal concerts. But it doesn't really matter. The machine, while perversely misleading at times, is never wrong, and like most prophets, its predictions only make sense after the event has already happened. So now, with that premise, hundreds of writers from around the internet set to work. How would this machine affect people? How would it affect society or business or politics? Would we become slaves to its predictions or simply shrug it off and live our lives as we did before, knowing that we're going to die anyway? So in the story Flaming Marshmallow, for example, by Camille Alexa, we see how the existence of the machine has begun to shape youth culture. The character Carolyn is about to turn 16, which is the legal age at which one can be tested. It's a milestone equivalent to getting your driver's license or being able to vote, and kids monitor each other's fates with scrupulous detail, the way only high school students could do. Your eventual manner of death brings you together with those of similar fates, and new cliques begin to form. So the kids are going to die violent deaths all sit together in the lunchroom, far away from the ones who get old age. The kids with drug overdose and the fates like that, they all kind of mill about with each other, and nobody talks to the ones who get suicide. By finding out one's manner of death, a teenager gets what teenagers always want, a sense of belonging and inclusion. But the question is, will Carolyn's fate bring her closer to her fellow students, or just leave her as an outsider? In another story, with a great title, After Many Years, Stops Breathing While Asleep with Smile on Face. It's by William Grallo, and it continues that idea out into the adult world. There's Ricky, who is dragged out onto the town to a nightclub, where people kind of flaunt their deaths. They wear fake toe tags that read murder or heart attack on them, or if they're feeling impish, they might write never or boredom. But, you know, while everyone else is mocking their eventual deaths, Ricky's in the odd position of knowing that he's got a good end to his life. What he doesn't know, of course, is what will happen between now and then, or with whom he will share it. David Mulkey, one of the three editors, explores the darker side of society's reactions in the story Cancer. In this story, James is a young man whose father is dying of cancer. It's what the machine had predicted, and it was all coming true. Despite the machine's infallibility, however, his father was seeking out a cure, a way out from the fate that had been given to him. And he's not the only one. This new generation of hucksters and faith healers has begun to spring up, all claiming to be able to defy the predictions of the machine. It gives James's father hope, but whether that hope is worth the price or not is something that James is unsure of. Let's see, what else we got? There's tons of stories in this. Nothing by Pelotard is a touching tale of a young woman who discovers a family secret that never would have been revealed before the machine was invented. In Despair by K.M. Lawrence, we have an examination of how paralyzed people might become by the ambiguity of the predictions, unable to act lest they inadvertently fulfill them. Improperly Prepared Blowfish by Gord Seller is an entertaining moment of secrets and betrayal among a group of Yakuza in Japan, and Ben Yahtzee Crawshaw has some fun with the politics of the machine predictions by giving us a politician whose fate is to die from exhaustion from having sex with a minor. Some stories are funny, some are touching, but they all center around that most existential of questions, which is, how do we live knowing that we will die? I mean, without the machine, we still know we're going to die. Every one of us has somewhere in the back of our mind that constant reminder that our lives are finite, that there's a limit to the amount of time we can spend on this earth. And for the most part, we choose to ignore it. After all, if you spend your entire life obsessing over your own death, then you can't have much of a life, can you? But now add to that fundamental knowledge of finitude the extra awareness of the manner of your death. So if you get car crash, what can you do with that knowledge? I mean, you know it's inevitable, the machine is never wrong, but you may still struggle with that fate. You may cut up your driver's license, move out to Amish country, and vow never to be within striking distance of a car again. The entire course of your life will shift drastically based on two words printed on that card. But the end result will be the same. Car crash. Knowing that, then, is it better to act on the knowledge you have gained or ignore it? Even worse, sometimes the very act of finding out your fate leads you right to it. In Suicide, for example, by David Michael Wharton, characters learn about their deaths only moments before experiencing it. Had they not gone to get tested on the machine, had they not gone to that machine, would they have avoided their fate? The machine would say no, but you'd have to ask it first. The best expression of this paradox is contained in the book's shortest tale, titled HIV Infection from Machine of Death Needle by Brian Quinlan, wherein the very act of discovering your fate causes that fate to happen, whereas you never would have had that fate if you hadn't gone looking for it, which is kind of a mind trip if you think about it. What if you get something kind of straightforward, you know, like cancer, and you decide to, I don't know, jump out of an airplane without a parachute? Would that even be possible, or will random events conspire to keep you safe until your prescribed end? And what if you get suicide? I mean, that is the one form of death that you have absolute control over. Do you fight against it, or do you give in knowing that nothing you do will change the outcome? And what could this tell you about the future for everyone? In the story Heat Death of the Universe by Ramon Perez, teenagers who reach the legal testing age all start getting nuclear bomb as their means of death. The government then springs into action, testing and retesting and vowing to corral all these kids into one place. But if their deaths are inevitably by nuclear bomb, then what does that mean? Well, it means that whether they're all in one place or dispersed across the country, that's how they'll die. Acting on the information doesn't change its outcome, only what the manner of that outcome will be. And conversely, it might be impossible to predict anything from the predictions the machine gives out. As was pointed out in the same story, the 3,000 victims of September 11th probably would not have had terrorism printed on their cards. They might have had falling, or fire, or plane crash. All true, but none of that would have helped anyone prevent that event. Even something as clear and unambiguous as global thermonuclear war creates problems, as Cassandra finds out in the story of the same name by T.J. Radcliffe. If you tell people about this future, will they even believe you? Or will the actions they take to prevent it instead be what causes it to happen? There's no easy answers, at least not without electroshock. It is a fascinating group of stories, illustrated by some of the internet's best artists as well. Adam Coford, Kevin McShane, Aaron Diaz, Kate Beaton, Christopher Hastings, and far too many others to mention now. It'll do what all really good writing should do. It'll make you think. And as seductive as it sounds, knowing the means of your death is information that you really can do without. It's the end to your story, whether you know it or not. But everything until then is still up to you. While you may not have any choice over how you will die, you still have plenty of control over how you live. You can live in fear, or you can live in hope. You can make plans and take risks and hope for the best, just like we do now. So I'd like to leave you with a joke from Stephen Wright, one that was running through my head as I read the book. He says, my girlfriend asked me, if I could know how and when I was going to die, would I want to know? I said, no, not really. And she said, okay, forget it then. Thank you. He'll be here all week. So let me leave you with a quote. This is from the story Friendly Fire, and the character Dad, who I don't think actually gets a name, basically sums up the entire book when he says, what good is knowing the future if you can't do anything with that knowledge? Perfect, right there. So that is Dad from the story Friendly Fire by Douglas J. Lane. Once again, it's a really great book. It's a lot of fun. The writers really are very sort of 21st century in their, not only their writing, but their publication. The book is Creative Commons licensed, which means that you can photocopy it, you can make your own audiobook things, you just can't sell stuff. You can't make money from it, but you can distribute it however you like. Plus, they did a really neat trick. They hacked Amazon's bestseller list. They figured out how to do it. They said, we're publishing a book. Everybody wait. Don't buy the book yet. Everybody buy the book on the same day. I think it was October 26th. Everybody buy the book on October 26th off of Amazon. And sure enough, they were number one for, I think, 2 days. They even beat out Glenn Beck, which is awesome. It's fantastic. But they did a really good job. It's a wonderful example of a lot of people coming together to make something great. So that is the internet for you. That's when the internet does good, folks. Really is. There you go. That is Machine of Death. Go pick it up or go to the blog, which is machineofdeath.net. And they've started doing a podcast, audio versions of their stories as well. So you can check that out. All right. So that's 100. What about 101? As long as we're talking about death and short stories, let's talk about what happens afterwards. This is not really a collection of short stories, but it does kind of read like one. It is an account of a war that never really happened, but it looks like it did. And of all the wars we've fought, this one is by far the most horrifying. Tell me what next week's book is. It's a really fun book. I enjoyed it a lot. And you will win one free Machine of Death test. I will personally tell you how you are going to die. Won't you be lucky? So if you get it right, there you go. You're going to find out. You will know, and you will have to act on that knowledge. You poor, poor people. So that is about it. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for listening and for sticking with me. I look forward to talking to you and hearing from you for another 100 episodes or 200 or however long I can keep this up. Again, I'd like to remind you to check out the new blog, which is thelablib.org, and everything will sort of be moving over there over the next month. And I will put up a link on the blog to the listener survey. I'll also put it on Facebook and on Twitter, and I would greatly appreciate it if you would just take a few minutes and let me know what you think of everything. Totally anonymous, you don't have to sign your name or anything like that, so don't worry about that. I certainly won't be sending my ninjas down to hunt you if you give negative feedback. So that is it for this week. Thank you very much. I hope that you do what you do well and you enjoy doing it the way I do. And I will see you all next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.